Alan Gring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 6, delivered on September 8, 2016. The title of this lecture is Ratio Analysis.
Tonight, Ratio Analysis. This is the second of the two lectures on the technical analysis of corporations. Little terminology, and I don't think I brought this up yet. One of these terms, I haven't seen it used in a long time, but the other term is still very much in vogue. When you are looking at companies to determine investment prospects, buy, sell, hold, whatever, you can look at the numbers and twist them and turn them and torture them and slap them and call them names. You can look at charts and do things like there are all these specialized, really weird kinds of charts like Japanese candlesticks, stochastics, trend line, neckline analysis. I'll even show you a little bit of that. It really doesn't have much. In reality, it doesn't really work, but there's a huge culture that believes it does. And that's sort of the extended version of the numerical analysis. I will stay away from that really heavy stuff tonight. We'll just do ratios and numbers. However, if all you do is numerical analysis and nothing more, the term that has been traditionally used for you is you're an elf. The elves are the technical analysts. Now, the other way to look at companies is, yeah, look at the numbers, but then go way past the numbers. Turn the numbers in ways that elves don't, and then just get out there and start looking at companies. Walk into the stores. Look how the stores are. Talk to people who have worked for the company. Listen to the rumors, find the message boards, and read what employees are saying about the company and all of that. That's fundamental analysis. Look at the executives. Look at their track record. Look at their problems, personally and professionally. Look at their successes and failures. And don't believe everything you read about them. That's fundamental analysis. We used to call those people the wizards. You had the wizards and you had the elves. Now the elves, you still hear that term all the time. We're going to have the elves look at our analysis tonight here on Financial News Network. I don't hear that term wizards much anymore because it's just kind of out of vogue. There's this sense that it's touchy-feely. It is not. It's hardcore. When I walk into a retail giant, I look for things in there. Okay, yeah, the employees probably are going to be demoralized or whatever. Yeah, that's kind of typical. I look at things like, okay, how many cash registers do they have open compared to the number of customers waiting in line? I look at the shelves. How many of the shelves have a good supply of things that people can buy? Or are they stocked out of a lot of things? Are there gaps on the shelves? And is that a persistent thing with this company? I look for just subtle signs that a company might not be at its best. One that I've noticed in the last year, 2 years, and also other things, is a company called Walmart. Notice how I just covered it up because I don't want a Walmart suing my ass. Okay. Interesting thing that solidified my suspicion that this company is not in the best of shape. They had the CEO position was open, and they had the opportunity to bring in some fresh blood, to bring in other words, to break free of that fixed factor of production that had gone on too long in the company with family members taking over one after the other. Sure enough, though, this company brought in one of the kids, one of the family boys, to be the new CEO. And that told me right there, they are not going to come out. They are still locked into this mentality that they know everything, and they don't see that their shelves are no longer stocked the way they were. The kinds of people that they have always attracted, even some of them are moving on. Their competition is spiking with Hy-Vee, with Meijer, with Giant Eagle. A whole series of other big boxers are coming out there. And you've got another monster that is really breaking the mold called Costco that is fascinating to me because its business model is so radically different from the typical big box model, especially with respect to the way they treat the employees. This is a sell on this company. And that was pretty much solidified when they decided that they didn't want new blood. They just wanted another round of the same old stuff that they've had before. That was, by the way, clear up to the level of civilizations and great empires. The Roman Empire just began to fall apart because they got these pathetic relatives and ancestral relatives of great leaders, emperors and Caesars. By the end, these rulers of Rome were so pathetic that the last one, the Visigoths, didn't even have the heart to execute the poor son of a bitch. He was such a pathetic little twerp. When you get to that point where you see that same Roman Empire falling apart, there's your cell signal. The thing of it is, though, that if we are going to do this, we're going to have to do some math. It's not hard math. It's just arithmetic. But what's the interesting part is asking the what does this mean? That takes us out of the elf territory, at least a little bit, and into the wizard's kind of discussion of it. Because remember, we're going to be looking at financial statements, which means that there's accounting, and that doesn't tell us the whole story anyway. Without further ado, I'm going to have to bring up a company, and I'm going to go to www.sec.gov, and from there, I'm going to go to filings, and I'm going to go to the Edgar filing system, and company or fund name, and I'm going to have to think of a company that I would like to look at. Now, the one that I'm going to choose does have a problem, and I caution you on this. These financial statements, you would expect them all to be exactly the same names for items, the same everything, categories. They're not. There's an incredible amount of variation. Not incredible, but it's bothersome. This one has a really weird little twist in its financial on its income statement. And it's kind of hard to explain until you see it. But my thinking here is, does anyone know what DPZ is? You know? Well, you've been there. Most of you have at least once or twice in your lives. Domino's Pizza. Yes, it's a public company. And do you see that three letters? Three-letter trading symbol means it's a New York Stock Exchange. This is a heavy-duty 800-pound gorilla. Okay, now let's search. And sure enough, Domino's Pizza, Inc. Now we've got an 8K. Remember, the 8K is non-recurrent. Let me show you one of them. I'm just kind of curious myself about this one on the HT. This document attached to exhibit, senior secured notes. To hold it in a series, kind of report provide. Oh, it's just a report. Huh. That one's a boring report. That's just really lame. Oh, well. Anyway, going here, we're going to go and find their last 10K. It would be here. Interactive data. So we're going to look at the financial statements of this company. Now, before we start, your mind, you've gotten to the point where you, actually in some ways, better than old analysts, you're sort of connected to the world, and especially retail, food services, food and all that. Pizza is tough Because you're in a business that has two layers of competition. Very different layers of competition, but two layers of competition. On the one hand, you have other giant pizza houses. Can you name, who would be big dog pizza competitors for Domino's? Can you name one?
Papa John's.
Papa John's, absolutely. Heavy industrial strength. Who else? You know? Huh? Pizza Hut, sure. Any others? I mean, there are, it's surprising if you went down the list, there are quite a few. But then you will notice that, especially in a market like this in a college town, there is this whole layer of these small-time pizza shops, little tiny operations that are right there to provide pizzas. Some of them are family-owned in a town. Some of them are just, they show up, run a pizza shop out of the garage. One side is for pizza, the other side is for crack and meth. I was sort of thinking, maybe I could make a pizza parlor called Breaking Bad Pizza. You know, a double revenue stream, and I know that's really inappropriate. Okay, look, the point there being that this is a bear of a business because you've got this pincer move on you. You've got these large houses with tons of marketing that they can do against you. You've got these little rats running around that can just pick off. They've got their own loyal customer base and all that. They got low overhead. So it's a tough business. Domino's survives in it. Excuse me. Now, let me take you on a small journey. Just walk through the financials just a little bit without doing anything really major with them. Consolidated balance sheets. Now, as I said, it used to be you'd see years of these, but now in these interactives, you'll see 2 years of balance sheets. And we can see that, for example, their cash position, you notice that just, this is the part where you're not doing math. You're doing the thinking about what the numbers say. And that's not math per se. You notice that their cash position has, good grief, it's gone up by about four times. You see that? They are building a cash base. Now, a question I'd have, and we're not going to answer it all tonight, but I am going to teach you how to ask and answer these questions and use your own judgment. I'm not going to tell you all the time, well, you think about it this way. I'll guide you at first, but then I want you to be able to think about it yourself. But I'd ask, well, why are they building a cash position like this? Remember that liquidity on one hand is great. You got cash to do things, pay your bills real fast. But at the same time, cash doesn't earn you much. It's not like you take that cash and you put it into a factory or you put that into a new fleet of vehicles or into a new computer system and it earns you its return on investment, return on your assets. But sitting there as cash, I mean, it's like putting it under your mattress. It's not earning you anything. They're not stupid. Obviously, they understand that. So there's some reason that is good why they're building a cash reserve. The question is, what is that reason? Working your way down through the grinder, a couple of things just to introduce you to some of the basics of ratio analysis. One that we always do is say current assets divided by current liabilities, which are where the hell are their... Oh, current assets are... This is way too much like work chasing. About what is it? Is that six of them? Why do they make these fonts so small anymore? 602, about 603 million in current assets against 375 in current liabilities. So not quite two times over can they pay their current bills with their current assets. That's called the current ratio, current assets over current liabilities. How many times over can they pay their current liabilities with their current assets? In this, and this is not, there's no such thing as a number that's too high, just right. You have to look at the industry. Now, the current assets over the current liabilities is is very high, I'd ask myself, well, they're kind of have a lot of liquidity that maybe they could be investing in long-term assets. But if the current assets over the current liabilities is too small, well, I'd worry about, can they pay their bills, their basic, you know, current bills that are due. Now, there's another one, too, that you will look at. We can look at. You take the current assets, but then you subtract out inventory. Because basically, inventory is almost worthless. Realistically, who's going to buy your inventory if you had to liquidate real fast to pay your current bills? In this case, it's really not a large amount. Their inventory takes them down to about 100 mil against their current liabilities. That's called the quick ratio. Anyway. By the way, I got a sheet up. It's on ReggieNet right now. It's just a formulas sheet. It's just your formulas, your basic ratios. You can have it laminated, put it on your refrigerator. It makes you look really impressive to guests who come over. Mom comes over. She says, well, you've got financial analysis formulas on your refrigerator. And you'll say, well, yes, I take care. I'm very into that kind of thing. Anyway, enough of that. Here's something that's interesting. Stockholders' equity, total stockholders' equity, in this company's case, is not only negative, $1.8 billion, it has gotten worse from the year previous, $1.2 billion. In other words, the financial statements say, you as a shareholder are dog meat. This company, the shareholders have a negative equity value. Book value of the equity, book, is negative $1.8 billion, worse than the negative $1.2 billion a year earlier. Well, let's go over here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to finance.yahoo.com. And I'm going to look up DPZ. The market cap is the market's assessment of what the equity position is. Now remember that the accounting statements say that the equity position of the shareholders is worth negative $1.8 billion. The market says that the equity total position is positive $7.2 billion. Which one do you believe is more relevant, more useful? Talk to me. Madam, talk to me.
I would say
you are dead wrong. Let me tell you, okay? Here. I'm going to have to. You had a comment? Okay. Think about it this way. You are you're very big into Dungeons and Dragons, okay? In fact, it's in the real world. You're playing it. And you got your cheat guide, this book you bought at Gameplay, that tells you what's going to happen on this level. It says a bunch of nasty little fairies with little wings are going to beat or batter you around your face. You're reading this. Then you look up, and there in front of you is a giant real-life dragon. No, wait, fire-breathing dragon. Ow! Dodgy lighter. Okay. Now, are you going to believe the book that says, hi-ho, hi-ho, we're going to kick her ass, we will. Okay? Or are you going to believe the dragon who says, medium rare, chicken nuggets. Bingo. Ranch sauce. I don't know what the hell this means anyway, but look, do you understand what I'm saying is that the market is the thing that will make you your fortune or lose you your fortune. Those financial statements are just paper. They follow rules that are required. I'm not trashing accountants. For one thing, they make a hell of a lot more money than I ever will. But the bottom line is that the real life money that you'll make, the value, The trading is there in that market. 7.2 billion is what the market says this company's equity, total equity value is. The financial statements say that the total equity value is $1.8 billion negative. So there you go. Just a start, just in your face, saying, look at the difference between what a market from second to second. Millions of traders, the fastest, most intelligent computers on Earth, the best and the brightest minds on Wall Street, in the capitals of the European countries, in the capitals of the Asian countries, and all of that, the financial centers of the world are saying $7.2 billion. Trading on this company day and night, 24/7. And then you have the accounting statement that says, oh, it's negative $1.8 billion. You pays your penny and you takes your choice. Now, the interesting thing here is, I'm going to bring up a couple of numbers right off the bat here for you. The interesting thing that's striking about this is there's going to be a contradictory information. The beta is 0.28. Now, at a beta of 0.28, talk to me. What would you say that beta tells you? Safe stock or risky stock?
Safe.
Incredibly safe. I mean, a beta of 0.28 is, I mean, remember I told you that 1.00 is like the fulcrum between risk and high risk, low risk? I mean, you get down to a beta of zero, you're talking about a treasury bill. This thing is an incredibly safe company in a diversified portfolio. On its own, this thing might be a monster. You don't ever buy stocks naked like that and then think that the beta, it's safe. I know I've got the Zika virus. This might be Ebola. Anyway, however, there's something else going on here, too, that might be worth talking about. P/E ratio. It's one of the ratios. This is the price per share divided by the current earnings per share. Here's what it tells you. How much is the market willing to pay for every dollar of current earnings belonging to the shareholders? So in other words, you would take $149.24, the close, the settle on the price, and you would divide that by the earnings of the company. Now, here's statements of income. Really? Net income? I knew I was going to click the wrong one there. Net income. Is there some reason I can't find the net income on this? There it is. $192,789,000. You divide that by the number of shares outstanding, so the earnings per share. Does that give me earnings EPS? Earnings per share. In other words, you would take the earnings per share. I don't know if they, I think they do just the basic. You take the price per share divided by the earnings per share. In other words, here's the idea. You are paying a price for a share of the stock right here, okay? That's a price. The company has paid its bills. All of those prior claims on assets. It's paid its bills in a timely manner. It's paid its light bills, its employees, its insurance payments, its internet charges. It's paid its taxes. It's paid its interest payments on its long-term debt. It's paid all of those. And now it's down at the point where what is left belongs to the shareholders. So, on a per-share basis, there is a certain amount of money that belongs to the shareholders. That money, some of that is going to be plowed back into the company. Some of it will be put out as a dividend, maybe, okay? The amount that is going to belong to the shareholders in either case creates a stream. There's the dividend stream coming back like this. present value of that. And then that money that was put back into the company as reinvestment, that's going to make the company get bigger and bigger and bigger, making the shareholders' value larger and larger in the future. So what we're doing is we're telescoping back what that earning is going to create in value in the future on a present value basis. How many dollars are you willing to pay right now for the bang that that dollar of earnings per share is going to create down the road? I can't say it much simpler than that. In this case, the market is willing to say, we'll pay $40 right now because we think that $1 is going to create, as a present value, $40 of income in the future for the shareholders through dividends, growth of the stock price, and all of that. That's what EPS means. It's tough to get your mind around it at first, but know this. The higher that number is, the riskier the company is. Now that kind of runs, let me explain. When I first started teaching finance years and years ago, we would get all kinds of nervous seeing PE ratios of 20, 30. Oh, that's an awfully big amount. And then came the 1990s. PE ratios of 100, 200, 500. Heck, there was legendary companies on the Nikkei, Japanese, that had PE ratios of 200,000. In other words, investors were willing to pay $200,000 for a claim on $1 of current earnings. I mean, that's nosebleed. So ever since that crazy time that was the 1990s, I mean, a P.E. ratio of 40, I still consider it to be, that's kind of speculative. That's a little worrisome to me. But for a lot of analysts these days, they'd say, oh, that's not too bad. But even at that, there's still kind of a disconnect between this beta, which is a very low. This is a very safe stock as far as an investment in a portfolio is concerned. But with that PE ratio at 40, there is some belief among investors that this is still a darn good stock to buy. Now, an elf would look at that book value of equity, and that elf would pee himself. It is not pretty to see an elf pee himself. Oh, book value is so low, it's negative. This company is going bankrupt. I don't see the market seeing that at all. I see the market thinking this is a relatively safe investment in a well-diversified portfolio. You don't buy this on its own, for God's sake. But at the same time, it has some prospects for real growth of the dividend and of the price of the stock itself. Now let me point out here, the dividend is $1.52. Dividend yield is the amount of the dividend per share divided by the price per share. Think about the dividend yield is like you put money into a savings account. This is the savings account interest rate. This is the sure money, or not sure money, but it's the more certain money. You know you're going to get this 1% payment every year. You invest $149, you're going to get about $1.49, $1.50 dividend out of it. The remainder is plowback. The company doesn't give to the shareholders, it gives out, it puts back into the company on behalf of the shareholders. Okay, now, companies have different dividend policies. Some companies give a lot of their money back to the shareholders, put just a little bit of it back into the company on behalf of the shareholders. Other companies say, no, I'm not going to give any money to the shareholders. We're doing good with what we can invest in. The mystery has always, there is a mystery involved. Why would a company, why would I give you, sir, you're the shareholders. This is your money at the bottom line. Why would I give it to you as a check when I could reinvest it in the company and grow the company. Essentially, if I give it to you as a check, I'm saying, well, I don't have anything good to do with this money. You probably know more about how to invest this, and we got nothing in our company that you own. So why would I admit to something? Why would I give you money back and just say, we don't have any idea of what to do with this money on your behalf in our company anymore? That's kind of the mystery side of it. Why are dividends being paid by companies? The answer, at least in part, it comes from a completely different part of academia, high-powered academia. It's called signaling theory. It's part of information theory. Signaling theory, the dividend is a signal. You have an extraordinarily wealthy uncle. Every time he comes to visit, he just hands you $100. He doesn't need to. You know, but he does because he wants to show you that he can do it. I was, years ago, when I was a consultant, I was doing consulting for one of the alphabet houses. These were the big insurance brokerage houses, the ones that represented giant companies that needed insurance. And the brokers would go to the insurance companies and say, put together a package for this company and all of its risks. There were these houses that did this were called alphabet houses, A&A, J&H, M&M. Alexander and Alexander, Jonathan and Higgins, Marsh and McLellan. They were called the alphabet houses. I was consulting in one of them. And it was during Christmas time, and they had the annual Christmas party. And this particular alphabet house had done very well that year. And the CEO got up there, tinkled his wine glass, and you should have seen it. There were these little nuggets of prime rib all over the place, and lamb chops, and all kinds of little cakeys. And it was incredible. He gets up there in front of the whole group of these powerful executives and their spouses, and he said, start talking about the incredible year they'd had, made money like you wouldn't believe, and you could tell it. I mean, he was just a high on the hog, and he talks about the numbers and he talks about the prospects for the future, and then he says, to quote Frank Sinatra, and he pulls out this Cuban cigar and he rolls a $100 bill, lights it on a candle, and then he lights his cigar with it. And I thought, you are going there. I'd never seen that before. And he said, to quote Frank Sinatra, oh yes, it was a very good year. And then he tosses the $100 bill burning into an ashtray. You know, I'm like, yeah, damn boy. But anyway, he was signaling. He could burn a $100 bill. The son of a bitch burned a $100 bill. You don't do that. That's White Castle for 2 months. Anyway, I kid you not. That was just one of those awesome things. I actually saw someone light a cigar with a $100 bill. I checked that, marked that off my bucket list. Anyway, signal. So, in other words, dividends, they might not make sense on a technical level. But on a human level, on a cultural level, on a bonding and binding together of different parties level, they make all the sense in the world. Domino's could probably find some darn good things to do with that buck 52 that they gave the shareholders per share. But they gave it to the shareholders to show that they could do it. They could. That's a very good way to put it. And if Domino's thinks it can do that, well, they're kind of saying to the market, we think we're in good shape, notwithstanding what the financial statements are saying to us about it. Okay, now, returning here to the financial statements. Here's the weird thing about these financials. And every financial statement, almost every financial statement will have its own little quirk. This one is a hard quirk because you notice that, look, it should, if it's a normal income statement, and it would be bigger than this, but just in summary, you would have your revenues minus your cost of goods sold, that creates gross margin, gross profit, gross income. Now, as I said, a lot of companies aren't even putting that gross income line there, but I always just add a line to the Excel sheet and figure it out anyway, because it tells you how much of your revenue survived wholesale. But anyway, after gross income, you subtract off your selling, general, and administrative expenses, SG&As we call them. You subtract off your depreciation expense. You might have some other weird stuff. And then you get to your operating income line. Operating income, which I told you, a lot of old schoolers will call that EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. Then minus the interest payments that you made to your long-term debt holders. And that gets you to your earnings before taxes, minus your taxes, and there at the bottom line is net income. That is the money that is available to the shareholders. This is all payments. You've satisfied your prior claims in a timely manner. Your debt holders. Your short debt holders up here, then your long debt holders here, and then the government, you've paid them their due. And then what is left at the end, that is the residual cash flow that belongs to the shareholders. Dividends and reinvestment. See the weird thing there? Look at it. There is no line after cost of goods sold until you get to operating margin, which apparently Domino's has interpreted generally accepted accounting principles and standards so that they can just lump all of their expenses in cost of goods sold. Now, if I did that, I am pretty sure the IRS would put me in a large federal facility bunking with a guy named Bubba. I can't imagine how they do this. They're just lumping all of those things that are specifically attached to sales. Remember I said cost of goods sold are the things you can say, this dollar of revenue cost this specific amount of money. But there are a lot of things that you can't do that with, like wages and salaries and all that kind of stuff. And yet, there they are doing it. So you don't have your gross margin line here, so that's kind of a downside to these. But I like this. I like these financials. They were suggested by a student this morning, so I have to give kudos where it belongs. But anyway, look, a couple of things here. Just at the down at this level, your interest expense. Now, there's some interest income that I should add back in, but I'm not going to do that. The thing of it is that what I want to ask myself is how well can they cover their interest expense? Because if this number is less than this number, the company's bankrupt. It can't pay its interest expense. The debt holders, the long-term debt holders, shut the company down unless the company can get protection in bankruptcy court. But in this case, the interest expense has been rising a little bit over time, maybe about 10-15%, but it is well supported by the growth of the money available to pay it. We call that times interest earned. Times interest earned. All you do is take your operating income, in other words, what we call EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, divided by your interest expense. And all it does, it's not a percentage, it's a multiplier, it's a factor. How many times over can this company pay its interest expense? Now, in this case, if I take the ratio, the last one, out on a calculator, and I do this deliberately, I could have these on a sheet and just blow the numbers at you, and that's cheating. I'd rather have you calculate them with me. I take, for the last year, 405,439 divided by 99,537, about 4.07. A little more than four times over, they can pay their interest expense with the money they have to do that. Now, if you were to do the ratios for the previous 2 years, this is called trending analysis, you would see that that times interest earned, if I did 313, 611 over 88, 872, and then did 345, 361 over 86, 881 for the 2 years previous, you would find that the times interest earned has improved. Not dramatically, but it has improved, and that is very good news. It's not, in other words, they're managing debt very well. They're not getting themselves into a rabbit hole with too much interest expense, but at the same time, they're maintaining some debt in their portfolio. Before I go any further, absolutely important. To be able to calculate percent change in a number, the actual numbers themselves don't really matter as much as percentage changes do. So you can tell me, well, that stock price went up by $10. Well, that's a lot different if it's a $20 stock than if it is a $100 stock. Percent change is always the ending value minus the beginning value over the beginning value times 100% to make it a percentage. Okay? So now, what I want to do really quickly here, is I want to see 14 to 15, 13 to 14, and then 12 to 13. And I want to see what's been happening with first with revenues. How have they been doing? And I strongly encourage you to do this with me. And of course, realistically, I'd probably be, I don't know though. Sometimes it's getting it all into an Excel sheet can be a pain in the butt sometimes. But I mean, it's okay to do it. I mean, heck, we've been doing it for years, almost 40 years. We've been, not quite 40 years, but we've been using spreadsheets to do this for almost 40 years before Excel. Does anyone know what the first spreadsheet we were using was before there was an Excel long ago? Well, there was actually one that was the very first one. Financial people like me, we were just thought this is awesome because we could do these routinely. It was called SuperCalc. But then the 800-pound monster gorilla was called Lotus 1-2-3. That was many, many years ago. Probably, do any of you ever, God, I hate this world. Don't even remember it. Okay, the hell with you. Okay, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to do 14. I'm screwing that up. I'm sorry. There's no 12 to 13. I keep forgetting these financial statements. Okay, 13 to 14. The growth I would take for 13 to 14. 1.9, I'm going to see the percent change in revenues. So I'm going to do 1.993833. Actually, open parentheses. Okay, 1.993833 minus 1.802223. Close the parentheses, divided by 1.802223. Now, some of this, your homework and your quizzes are going to just, it's all arithmetic. They're going to ask you for percentage, give you a sort of a fake company and have you do this kind of stuff and do some ratios. It's not hard. Just don't make a mistake like I usually do. Equals. Okay. Revenues from 2013 to 2014 grew by positive 10.63%. That's decent. It's good. Okay? Now let's see what happened from 2014 to 2015. What is it? Do you see something really weird ass here? Oh, they switched, they moved their accounting year. I saw that 15, that's weird. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Oh, well, Apparently, the people at the SEC like Domino's Pizza, so they don't kick them in the butt for doing weird things. Okay, anyway. Okay, Claire. Okay, open parentheses. 2216. 2216. 528. Wondered what you were talking about there. Minus 1993. 833. Close the parentheses. Divided by 1993. 833. Oh, 11.17%.
Growth of revenues, 11.17%. Accelerating growth in revenue. Not only are they growing their revenues, they're growing them at an increasing rate. Not dramatic, but are you beginning to see why the market is assessing this company favorably? This is in the pizza business, there are pizza houses showing up all the time, new ones. There's a couple of them. I don't know if you're familiar with the town here. We've got like three new pizza joints, fairly, regional size, that have shown up in the last 6 months here in town. There's some place called Blaze Pizza or Blazing Saddles Pizza. I don't know what it is. And then there are a couple of other larger regional houses that are showing up. Decent pizza. And Pizza Ranch has come into town. Have any of you been to Pizza Ranch yet? Oh, my God. All you can eat pizza. If they don't have a pizza you like, you can ask them and they'll make it. They have fried chicken and mashed potatoes there. It's great. It's wonderful. It's sort of like a family place. There's kids there, so sometimes I'll sneak in a clown mask and I'll put it on real fast and scare kids, to keep them away from the fried chicken. Where the hell was I? Okay. Anyway. But now the dark side. Let's look at their cost of sales. It's going to be a dark side, a downside here, but not, well, let's see. Let's just see. I'm going to take the 14 over 13, that would be 1399067 less 1253249, 1253249, close the parentheses, divided by 1253249. As Scooby-Doo would say, rut-roll. Cost 14 over 13 went up by 11.64%. Their cost grew faster than their revenues did. Bad sign. Okay, so there's a negative on it. Okay, see how you're doing it? This is actually, technically, we're getting into what's called comparative analysis. Okay, let's see how bad this got the next year. We're going to look at 1533, 1533, 397, less 1399, 067. Close the parentheses, divided by 1399067. Well, isn't that nice? Cost grew 9.60%. They got it under control. You see it? These numbers, they're trying to tell us something. They're telling us things. Math for the sake of math. I've got a math degree. I can walk circles around almost anyone on earth in high-powered math. But unless you can listen to the numbers and let them tell you something, your math is nothing. And here, we've got a story being crafted out just from the numbers. They had their costs running ahead of their growth in revenues. But it looks like one of two things happened. And I would say that either they realized this and they thought, oh, the heck with that. No. We're going to bring our costs under control. Or this was a year when they spent money. They literally did spend money so that they didn't have to spend it later. That's another explanation. Either way you cut it, this is a good sign. This company is showing health. And again, we're seeing why the market is saying go for this company. Why it's giving it this decent market cap. And why it's also saying this company is not all that unsafe. This company is relatively certain of itself. It's got a solid growth rate pattern in a competitive environment. It's shown its ability to bring costs under control and drop costs under, which improves the net income at the bottom line. It's showing that it doesn't go crazy with debt and have big interest expenses, unlike Netflix, which is still not shown what it's doing. That's ratio analysis. And there are other ratios that I can break down, but what I want to do, I want to take you on a journey back over here to the balance sheets. Now, I want that balance sheet, yes. There are so many different names for things. Okay, now, first things first, just a couple of liquidity ratios, and I already brought this up. The current ratio is your current assets over your current liabilities. It's how many times over your liquid assets can pay your bills that are within a year in duration. Okay? It's a measure of liquidity. Too high, you probably got too much cash. You should be investing in a long term. Too low, I begin to get all kinds of excited. What are the boundaries? You just have to look at the industry. Now, there's another one under this one called the quick ratio. Sometimes this one is called the acid test. You'll hear me call this one acid. It's the same thing as the current ratio, current assets, but you take out inventory. Because, honest to, and then you divide by current liabilities. Because, honest to God, your inventory is really not going to make anything. If you had to liquidate, your inventory is going to sell for pennies on the dollar. Odd Lots is going to come in and give you 2 cents for every $10 of inventory. So realistically, the quick ratio says, all right, if you really need money to pay your current bills, if that it got to that, you probably aren't going to get anything out of your inventory anyway, no matter what it says on your financial statement, on your balance sheet. In the real world, you're not going to get much for it. There's one that is not in this book, and I haven't seen it in a book in years and years. It's an old school ratio. I've got all these old school ratios, but there's one that it's on that formula sheet that you can download and print out if you want. It's one that used to be, we all were interested in. It's called the burn ratio. The burn ratio is just your cash and marketable securities. Divided by your current liabilities. Think of this one as the zombie apocalypse ratio. If you had today to pay your current liabilities, your current liabilities had turned into zombies and they were at the door. Baby. Now, are you going to run down and sell your accounts receivable, sell your inventory? No, you're going to reach into the money pit and throw money at them and tell them it's brains. Here, eat this. You darn zombies. And don't forget double tap and cardio. Apparently you haven't watched Zombieland. Okay. Anyway, you see what I mean? The burn ratio just said, look, if it really did come down to the day of reckoning, you don't have time to sell all these current assets like your accounts receivable, your prepaid expenses, your inventory. All you've got is the money that you in the bank to pay with. So that's why this burn ratio, like I said, is old school stuff. Hardly anyone uses anymore. Okay, a couple of others that are interrelated. Now, I'm leaving a few out there. It's like I said, it's arithmetic, but I'm talking to you about the ones that are the first ones that I would be looking at. There's one called debt to equity. Or let me do it this way, debt to total assets. I'll do it this way. Sometimes you do it as debt to equity or debt to total assets. This is the percentage of the total value of the corporation that is owed to the debt holders. It can be all over the place. Some companies have very little debt, almost no debt. Apple is a good example of that. Other companies have incredibly high debt, what we call leverage, as a percent of the total value of the corporation. Debt to total assets. As a rule, this propels return on equity. Now, return on equity and return on assets, ROA and ROE. ROA is net income over total assets. ROE is your net income over your equity. Now you'll notice with Domino's, I can't calculate the return on equity because the accounting statements say their equity is negative. So I could calculate the ROA. First things first, the higher the debt to equity ratio, the more likely it is that you will have a strong return on equity. In other words, debt leverage enhances ROE. Now, I want to bring up a term here, and it sounds like I'm making a joke, but I promise you, I am not. OPM. And I'm curious. You've had business courses before this. One of the reasons I get my ass in hot water is because I tell you things that are politically incorrect to tell you. But I will be darned if I'm not going to tell you this one. This one is important. Do you know what OPM is? Other people's money. It sounds like a joke, but I guarantee you it is real, and in the next lecture I will show you how powerfully real it is. Here's the deal. I have a choice of making you my equity partner in this business of mine. Or I can just borrow money from you at 10%. Now, if you are my equity partner, and let's say we make 50% return, you share my 50% return. You're my partner. But if you are my debt holder, I pay you 10% and that is it. There is no holding hands and going off into the rainbow and the sunset together, singing a happy song. No, you get your 10%. I keep everything else I earn above that 10%. I pay you off, it's done. The deal is, we cleared our deal. Other people's money. But if you're my partner, if I have to sell you stock in my company, then I'm married to you forever. And let me tell you, bad, bad choice. No, seriously, noob. Sorry, personal issue. Yeah. You follow what I'm saying, though? Other people's money. It's not a joke. This is how you make magnified dollars. Is because if you borrow money, then everything above what you pay that bank is yours to keep. But if you have extra shareholders, if you raise money through selling stock, or you raise money for your partnership by getting a partner, your sole proprietorship by getting a partner, they get the same as you get. That's why debt, as your debt component of the total assets of the corporation increases, that can, as long as you don't screw up,
That can cause return on equity to magnify. Now I'm going to tell you another thing. Return on assets. Completely different story here. You will see elves, and you notice my opinion of elves is rather dim. They're nice people. But look, total, I can make ROA go up. I promise you, and I actually, in back in the day, I could make it go up. It wasn't anything lying or cheating. It was actually business modeling where I can make ROA go up by not buying more assets, working the hell out of the assets that I have, so that as time goes on the balance sheet, the depreciation eats away my total asset base. The denominator is falling. But as long as I am beating the heck out of those assets, I can make my net income keep going up year over year. ROA goes up. I'm a hero. Look at how that guy makes that return on assets go up. Well, here's a real-world example of it. The American refineries. The last of them were built in the 70s. And then they just started using them. As the oil flowed in, more industrialization, Asia was industrializing, we were industrializing more, parts of South America were industrializing, more oil for a fossil fuel hungry world, swilling it, it had to be cracked. You had to put it into these cracking towers, the refineries, bust it down into the distillates and the fuels for a world that was coming to life in the 80s and 90s. No more refineries, just work the hell out of the refineries that existed. As that happened, of course, total assets weren't just staying the same, they were depreciating by generally accepted accounting principles consistently applied. So net income was rising on the refineries. As total assets were falling, ROAs were going into insanely big territory. And then the refineries started to explode. Workers by the hundreds being killed, towns being evacuated, people being killed near the explosions. You might be old enough to remember some of those in the early years of the 2000s, the refinery explosions along the coasts. That was the consequence that was paid for what they were doing. It's done all the time in other businesses. Oh, the Wall Street boys told me to fire half of my people and they'd buy my stock and make the price go up. Okay, you're fired. And then I'm going to work your butt, your ass, and your brains until you fry. Because my assets, I've gotten rid of some of those. I'm making you work like dogs to bring up my net income. ROA goes up. The Wall Street boys say, see, we told you firing those people would make your financials look better for the elves. Well, of course it did. But in the long run, what you get is a demoralized workforce. You don't have half the brains that you had before. And ultimately, what's going to happen is that your business model will someday implode, as it is right now with a company that I mentioned to you before, early in this lecture. That's the consequence. I can make these ratios do dances. Any good business analyst, if you hire me for your company, I can make these numbers do incredible things, especially with ROA. I can make ROE go up way high. But the danger is the more debt my company holds, the more likely it is that a little blip downward in sales is going to put my times interest earned under 1.0 and I'm dog meat. I'm out of business. But that doesn't mean you should not do something. Take risk. I want to show you something right here. A couple of things really quickly. Let's take, for example, Apple. Whoops, I didn't want to do it that way. I wanted to do it over here on the financial statements. I apologize for that. Really?
Okay, let me take Apple. Let's look at their debt.
APPL.
Wait. Oh, I'm just testing your ass, okay. Isn't that it? Okay.
AAPL.
10K. Is there some reason this sucks? Where's your 10K? Oh, there. Okay. Real quick, look at their financials. Financial statements. Balance sheets. Long-term debt. Look at their total assets. Look at their total assets. Are close to $300 billion. Their long-term debt is about 5.3. In other words, less than 20% debt-to-equity ratio on that company. Now, if I were to take it back to where I had been before and do DPZ, their debt-to-total asset ratio... Oh, I'm trying to hurry here, too. There it is. I should have calculated that when I was financial statements, consolidated balance sheets. I'm always doing that. Okay, their total debt, about long-term debt, $2.2 billion. Holy cow! Wait, how? Oh, yikes. Debt plus equity equals assets, right? Well, I just found out why they have a negative equity. Debt, $2.2 billion, plus equity, negative 1.8, is the way you get it to equal $799 million. They are leveraged. Okay, here's a technical term. Domino's is leveraged out the ass. No, seriously. That's why the PE ratio is so high. Because there is an expectation of a very strong price return on equity on this company because they're using OPM, huge amounts of other people's money. But the beta is low because the company is growing. It's got a strong market position. So this is a company that is safe in the sense that it's not going to die. It's growing. But it's also a company that could promise, that might create incredible return on equity because it's hugely leveraged. Well, there you go. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.